It is time for the Frickin' Frack of Nick and Knack, the appraisal guys, Tim Luke and Greg Strom. You'll find them on the web. Where? At TQAG.com. Let's welcome them in from cool Florida. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning, Marshall. Cool Florida.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if it's cool or not. It's funny. Our meteorologist. We have a substitute meteorologist this week because Pappy got away on vacation, and he's lived in Florida his whole life. And he said the population boom in Florida, which occurred in the '60s, early '60s, started really was because of the invention of central air conditioning. he said before, if you look back and before that, he said the boom to there was not there, but after that the boom came, and I guess you guys are experiencing hot weather down there as well this week, right?
Well, honestly, it's warm, but I have to say it's not as warm as other places in the nation, which is why air conditioning is nice. But we've had beautiful weather, honestly. Yesterday was a little I think it got up to 90.
Oh, that's nice.
I mean, considering that it's warmer in other areas of the country, actually right now around the world, that it is here in Florida, which has always been that, in Arizona have always been the bellwethers for what hot weather is.
But how about this? In Northern England set a record high temperature for the day yesterday amongst all the. Now, if you look at Northern England, there's no way you would ever think that would be humanly possible.
It is amazing. I was watching the weather this morning, and they were saying that it was it's the hottest it's ever been in history in England.
Well, and the funny thing is the cities are prepared kind of for it, but out in the countryside, they're not prepared for weather like that. They're just not.
Right.
And I don't think most, because of the natural weather, or the weather that's just the temperatures are naturally not hot, I'm pretty sure that most people and businesses don't have air conditioners. It's interesting you bring that statistic up about when Florida started to become the boom state. But back then, an air conditioner was a luxury.
Yep.
It was not something that was put in your house automatically, central air conditioning. It was a luxury. I mean, even to have a window air conditioner in Ohio when we were growing up was a luxury. And now it's just mandatory.
Did you guys have it? When I lived in the old farmhouse before we moved to, I built a new house and moved, there were these units that you could put in your house. You put a tray, ice cube tray in the bottom of them, filled it with ice cubes, and you turned it on. And of course, it would take the, and it would blow cold, it would blow cool air into your room. We had like six of those.
Do you know what that's called? In Arizona, they call that, there's actually a term for it. It's called swamp cooling. It's because the breeze blows across the cool water or the ice, and that's what they call it is swamp cooling, because it's like when if you would lick the back of your hand and blow on it, it feels like it's cool. That's the basis of swamp cooling.
Let's get on to some stories here that I want to pass along, and this it fits in here. Christie's has launched something called Web3 Investment Fund. It's part of Christie's Ventures. It's focusing on bringing art and finance together. I always thought that art and finance were together.
No, not always.
I mean, you look at art and you look at the money that's involved in art. They're going to invest in innovation, art-related financial products, and solutions and technologies enabling seamless consumption of art.
Well, and not just, well, it also says, it's one of our favorite words, Greg, blockchain investments.
Yes. Now, the statement that you made, it just reeks of blockchain without even mentioning the word, because the technology, they're basically, I think it sounds to me like they're planning on the technology of art and finance rather than the actual, you know, old masters. Or it's, I think they're trying to build up, create a market, basically. That's what it seems like to me.
Well, they're creating a portfolio, basically, of investment opportunities for collectors. So instead of having, so let's look at it from a business standpoint, in the way that you look at a mutual fund or a diversified fund where it invests in one sector. Let's say it's energy or it's pharmaceuticals. This would be fine art and luxury goods. And what they're trying to do is create this fund based on the finances. So interesting. But I mean, who better to put this all together than one of the leading auction houses that is dealing with some of the most expensive artwork and what's going out there? I'll have to read more about the article to see how, you know, if does Christie's hold on to these artworks, or is there a consortium of collectors that are that they're just putting artwork in that raises the funds? Because this is it's a whole new area. But it's fascinating how they are not only making art more of an investment, so they're making it in real time, quick time, so that instead of buying a piece of art, holding on to it for 10 years, and saying, oh, I paid $2 million for this, and now I sold it for $20 million, have that percent increase, here's the opportunity to have this as a fund that is constantly paying dividends, just depending on where the market is, I guess.
You know,
you hope it pays dividends. Yeah.
Correct.
To move on, though, Christie's is holding an NFT auction at OpenSea with Ethereum, as a matter of fact. And I look at that. I look at that headline, and then I look at the Financial Times for July 18th. $500 billion wiped from value of once high flying. Crypto finance, $500 billion in the past 8 months, gone from an unregulated industry.
Yes.
And that, to me, it still brings up the question, okay, all of this has, you know, the losses, you know, this wipeout, but it wasn't real. It wasn't backed by anything. That's what I think that's for me the biggest mystery of all. I just don't understand how it works. But you know, they all of that $500 billion, what did it really represent? In you know, solid assets did that really represent? And I can't answer that, because I still just cannot figure out for the life of me where the value comes from.
Well, the value came from, there was value there. There was value, but it's unregulated value. So that's the big turn that you have to add when you had the value there. Yes, there really was value there. Heck, there's value in so many different schemes to make money. The value is there, but if it's not regulated and it's not really supervised and it's not held accountable, it goes away like this.
Well, that's like the pet rock. I mean, an analogy to that. I mean, it was the hottest thing since the wheel, and then all of a sudden it just died. And we've noticed we've noticed, we've been talking about this over the past 6-7 months, how the market for this crypto currency and all of these NFTs and all of this, it's almost as though the people who made the most money knew that it was a get rich and get in and get out sort of scheme. That's what it seems like to me. Well, and no, so those people have made their billions.
Right.
And now the other people who bought into this, it's almost like a pyramid scheme to me. That's my take on it. But well, I mean, I'm sure I'm way off base.
No, you're not so far off base, no. Greg. And it's very similar to what you were saying. It goes along with the pet rock, the mood ring, and all of those other fads, and earth shoes, and all the fads that everybody had to have, and then boom. It doesn't have the lasting longevity as other things in the marketplace. So it piques the interest. It's something new. It's something different. But it may be that it's also a little before its time. And we've talked about this several times, you can basically view your NFT on a phone, but you can't hang it on a wall unless you can stream that somehow to a device that's either mounted on your wall or some sort of frame. And I think that we are in the midst of a changing market where people are looking at art differently. They're looking at the digital side of the artwork, the NFTs. That there was a big boom. It's just like when an artist dies, it spikes and then it levels off. And I think we have a spike and it really has declined because I think too many people were putting too much hype. I mean, there was a lot of hype and enthusiasm behind all of the NFTs and the blockchain and cryptocurrencies, all different things. But I think that some people are in it for the long run. Some people see it as something that's viable. This is why you don't just jump into something if you don't read up on it, know it, and understand what the pitfalls are. Just like buying art, you just don't go out and start buying art and hope that it's going to increase in value. There's research that you have to do, and it's the same thing here.
Well, if you stop and think about what would happen if the good old-fashioned green dollar bill, if it lost 70% of its value like Bitcoin has over the past year, it'd be like the stock market crash again. But it right. doesn't seem
but Greg, you also have to understand it's not Bitcoin that lost, it was the Ethereum. There are different currencies out there that have lost those, have lost the value. And a lot of it is, and Marshall brought this up the other day, is that they're just creating it. There's no limited number. Bitcoin is the only one that has a finite number of coins that can be mined, and that's the one that has really held its value. Yes, it has gone down, don't get me wrong, but not as dramatically as some of the other currencies. And that's the whole thing, is when you're talking about value, and this is what we do as appraisers, what are the factors that really, the economic factors or the physical characteristics that really create that value, or what is going on in the marketplace that helps that? And one of the things is the concept that there's not an unlimited number of these items. And, you know, being in the collectibles department or collectibles area, we've seen this throughout the last 30 years, Greg, since we've been together,
yeah.
Is when Beanie Babies, Earth Shoes, Pet Rocks, Mood Rings, all those things that you brought up. People thought, oh, I've got to have it. You know, what happens at Christmas when it's the hottest toy and they don't have enough of them? And then come February when they mass produce more of them, nobody wants it. You know, so I think that's what we're seeing in this market, as opposed to when you have a piece that is just done by a specific artist for a specific purpose, and that's it, and there's a limited number of things out there. Maybe the artist only lived a short time. then the market responds to that because there's more rarity and there's desirability. So when all those things are added together, that's where the value increases.
Well, I think that the people, it just seems to me that the only people who are making a killing in crypto, even though it's down 70%, are the people who are holding the little velvet bag that's got, you know, that started this thing. They're the people who are, for lack of a better word, mining for other people to join them.
It's a classic.
It's almost to me like a scheme.
And it's a classic tale. Those early in, early out.
And
bingo. And like if you bought, let's say you spent $20,000 on Bitcoin, and all of a sudden that $20,000 turned into $2.5 million. Well, right. let's say it drops down to $1 million. You're going to get out. Still in good position. So it's, you know, it's early and it's like the stock market and everything else. But the only thing is, once again, it's not regulated. So it's early in and very important, really important early out. Where in the stock market, if you've got major holdings, you can weather the storm over the period of time. With Bitcoin, if you're late in on Bitcoin, you can't weather anything. But anyways, let's go on to Buzz Aldrin.
Buzz.
He's auctioning off some items from his time on the Gemini 12 and Apollo 11 mission to the moon. He's going to auction. Yeah, he's, you know, I NASA can't be too happy about this, but
no.
He's got things like the jacket he wore on the moon that had "Go Army, Beat Navy." He had a banner he bought with him. That will bring big money from people that went to Army and stuff like that. There's just a whole bunch of interesting things that are going to be put out there, and the fact that he's the last surviving Apollo 11 member, also adds. This is terrible, but it does add provenance.
Well, it does, but also in the auction is the in-flight jacket that he wore to the moon and back.
Yep.
And it has a serial number of 1039 in his name, E. Aldrin, printed above the Apollo 11 mission patch, which actually Sotheby's is the one selling this, and it estimates it could go as high as $2 million. Space items and space-related items have really become more and more popular, but yeah, I think that he may be getting a knock on the door from Scully and Mulder, just saying, sir.
You know, when I hear this story, I always think back that there used to be a show called The Beverly Hillbillies. And Buddy Ebsen was the father and Jethro Tull was the dumb son. And Buddy Ebsen would look at Jethro Tull and Jethro and say, "That boy's got nothing but space in his head," and he wasn't talking about outer space. He's talking about space. So whenever I see a story like this, I just think of Buddy Ebsen saying, "That boy's got nothing but space in his head."
You know, the other interesting thing that is being offered in this lot, which I think is fascinating, and I'd love to see what this sells for. It says another notable lot is the broken circuit breaker switch that infamously could have left the crew stranded on the moon, along with the felt tip pen Aldrin used to ignite the engine when the switch malfunctioned. And I mean, just reading that, I remember the scene from Apollo 11 from the movie. And just that alone too, that should do really well.
Huge.
Well, you know, if this if that switch did completely malfunction and they weren't able to get back here, we wouldn't even be having this conversation. Yeah. So that in itself,
of course,
for
that breaker switch, they have it estimated to sell at auction between 1 and 2 million. And the other thing about this, and this also is what goes to the added value and that people have seen this, is that the switch and the pen have been loaned out to museums across the nation, like the Museum of Flight in Seattle, and most recently was at the Smithsonian National Air and Space Museum. So interesting. That's going to be a great sale to watch.
Well, I don't know if you read the article in Forbes about this, but if you look, once you get to the end of the article, they have other for additional information, and there's different topics in the same category, and one of them is that he had lunar dust that he sold, and it sold for $500,000, but he only was able to sell it after NASA lost in court. So there's kind of a chain of information about the space collectibles around Apollo 11 that you can read these different articles, and it kind of gives you more of an insight as to why he's able to get away with it for some reason, because he's Buzz Aldrin.
That's exactly right.
He was the man who was on the moon.
That's exactly so, right.
But it's that, but it's also the really poor record keeping that NASA did in the 60s and 70s.
That's exactly right. So NASA opened the door for all this to happen.
They did.
You can't unring a bell. I'm sorry. There's just no way. And once you open that door, you have to, you just have to go with it.
Right. Remember a couple of months ago, we talked about there was moon dust or something that a woman was, that NASA tried to stop. But again, it was the cockroaches who ate the moon dust. They were able to actually, I think they're still litigating, but I'm sure that NASA's going to lose again because she has all the records. Everything was retained and she didn't, you know, they didn't want it back. So it's not like it was theirs they basically abandoned whatever ownership rights is when they said, no, we're done. Okay. You just keep it all. Here you go.
All right. Now.
Yeah. And that's the problem. You just can't have it both ways. Yeah. You can't fight for something one time and then not fight for it another. So it's they started the issue, and they're just going to have to reap the consequences of flip flopping back and forth.
The last couple of minutes, this is an interesting story. The Enola Gay logbook, which recorded the first ever atomic bomb dropped, has sold for over $500,000. Now, this logbook is one of one, okay? It's in-flight documentation of the bombing of Hiroshima by the captain, who is from Ridgefield, New Jersey. It's a line-by-line written account. And bidding started at $400,000 and went to about $500,000. It's a horrible event that happened in history, but this is one of those documents that I kind of feel a little weird that it was put up for auction, and because this is a document that probably should be on display in public.
I agree that the consequences of that action changed history, and it really is a historical world document that needs, I think, that is better served to be seen by the public and should be on display somehow so that people can see it instead of being in a private collection. As much as I can understand why somebody would want to have this as an amazing piece of history to have in your collection, but then again, it's not just about one person. This is an event that changed the history of the world.
Changed history, right?
It needs to be. People need to remember this and see it every once in a while. You know, like you have it on public display, so that hopefully it never happens again. So I am totally with you on that, Marshall.
Yeah, and this piece had an interesting background, too, because it was owned by Malcolm Forbes, and he sold it out of his collection in March of 2002 for $350,000, and now it is resold for close to $500,000. So just to bring it back to what we started talking about, rate of investment, depending on the item and how long you hold on to it, is and the desirability, these are examples of things that do go up in the marketplace.
All right, guys, always great to talk with you. Stay cool down there. We'll speak to you next week.
Okay, have a great week.
Bye-bye, guys.
Bye, Marshall.
Tim Luke and Greg Schramm, the appraisal guys, the Frick and Frack of Nick and Knack with Appraise This, TQAG.com on the web.